when I was admitted to the hospital, I was immediately given Pitocin because they wanted to regulate my contractions and make it more, I guess, progressive, because I wasn't making that much progression at home. The nurse, you know, went through her regular assessment, asked me for my name, where I live, how far my contractions were. And then, you know, she introduced herself. She said, you know, this is what we're going to be doing. I said, okay, great. I said, you know, this is my third pregnancy, so I'm pretty much know, you know, what's expected of me and whatnot. So she told me to get undressed. I got undressed. She started trying to put in the IV. That alone was a little bit challenging, I guess, for her. And for me, I was taken back because I thought, you know, because she was a little bit older, I thought maybe it would have been an easier stick. And considering that I did tell her that I am a hard stick, and she said, don't worry. She ended up sticking me about 3 times before she actually got my vein. And in the process of that, there was blood everywhere, and, you know, just the cleanup wasn't that great either. But I was like, you know what? She's probably rushing. She probably has other patients to, you know, take care of. She told me also that I needed a specific antibiotic after a half hour after we had the Pitocin going. And I said, okay. She said, it might burn. I said, okay, I know. I'm aware of that. Immediately it did start burning, but I started, you know, just to kind of like, you know, give it some time. And then I started paging her, and I said, you know, she came in and she's like, what's the problem? I said, well, it's really hurting me. It's really getting uncomfortable. Can we slow it down? She said, no, we can't slow it down. She's like, I'm going to get you an ice pack. And I said, okay. She left again. My husband paged her again. He said, you know, my wife is really uncomfortable. She's really complaining about this. And she's like, you know, it's not that terrible. And I'm like, well, I'm the one feeling the pain, and I would like for you to stop it, or, you know, slow it down. So I started crying at that point, just because I felt a little bit frustrated, because I felt that I was supposed to be focusing on laboring, and this was really distracting me from what, you know, I was there to do. She finally slowed it down once she saw that I got really upset. And she didn't apologize, which I guess, you know, she didn't really have to, but she could have, you know, said something comforting or compassionate at the time, since, you know, I'm about to give birth to a child, you know, I was really upset. The hours progressed, and I know certain hospitals have like regulations on hourly rounds or half hour rounds, and she really didn't check on me that much. I guess she kind of assumed because I was an experienced mother, third pregnancy, perhaps, you know, I didn't really need her, and my husband was there. When it came time before I gave birth, I had asked her if I could use the bathroom. She told me no, that I couldn't get up anymore. And I said, okay, well, can I get a bedpan? She handed me the bedpan, and I said, you know, I can't really get up by myself. And she's like, okay, well, just lift up your butt. And I said, I'm trying to. Can you please, you know, assist me? She didn't really make the effort to assist me. My husband was the one who was actually assisting me. And I said, you know what? It's okay. I'll have my husband do it. It was probably wrong on my part for me to kind of let her off the hook and say, you know what? It's okay. In a sense, don't do your job. I just said, it's okay. My husband will help me. And she left. And then my husband was the one taking the bedpan out, emptying it out. And then when I needed it again, he would bring it back and help me. I guess maybe the nurse within me was like, you know what, I can do this myself, I do this all the time, I'll just do it. But that's probably a disservice to other patients, because it's making her actions be okay when they were not. When it came down to labor, you know, the labor was pretty quickly. I didn't get any sort of medicine or epidural. You know, I pushed, the baby came out, the baby didn't cry, there was a little bit of commotion within the room because of that. They ended up checking the baby, and they said the baby was fine. They handed me the baby. About 5 minutes after that, the baby started turning cyanosis blue. I called her. She immediately was in a frantic state. Again, perhaps, maybe that's just the way she reacts, but I know and from my profession and from what we were taught in school, you know, we kind of have to hide our emotions a little bit when certain situations happen. She said, oh my God, we have to take her to the NICU. And another nurse came in, and she's like, no, just put the baby under the warmer. Her temperature probably just fell a little bit. And she said, no, I'm taking her upstairs. And she ran out with the baby, not putting the baby in an incubator. I don't know
if when you say she ran out with the baby, you mean that she had the baby in her arms?
In her arms, yes. She took off with the baby in the hallway. From what my husband told me, because obviously I was laying down still, you know, bleeding and, you know, on the machine and things like that, she took the baby up in a regular bassinet. To me, it's not really correct because the hallway was already cold. If her temperature was already falling to that degree, that could have really turned into a really terrible situation.
So you were afraid that because she took the baby out of the bassinet,
yes,
that and went down the hallway, that your daughter's temperature would drop and she would be challenged,
yes,
with her breathing even more so.
Yeah, because she had to go upstairs to NICU. So she left in a frantic. Then I was left, you know, nobody really came to tell me, you know, what's going on or to explain to me. And for a mother, I mean, I wasn't a nurse at that point. I was a mother who had just given birth, a mother that was questioning, was my child going to make it? What is going on? You know, she didn't cry initially. So a lot of these factors were just like running through my head. Eventually she came back. One of the other nurses came and said, you know, the baby's stable. They have her in NICU. And then my nurse came down and explained to me that, you know, she was going to be in NICU for a couple of hours. They were going to evaluate her. And I said, okay, you know, no problem. At that point, I asked her if I could have some pain medication. I was in labor for about 7 hours, and I only pushed 3 times, which is, you know, pretty good. But I was having a lot of discomfort. And she stated, well, I honestly don't know why you need pain medication. You didn't even tear. And I said, well, I feel...
She said you didn't even tear?
Yes, I didn't even tear. And I said...
So you didn't have to have an episiotomy, so she believed that was the reason why, yeah, you should not have pain.
She's like, you didn't even tear. And I'm like, I know, I'm aware I don't have any stitches, I said, but I feel uncomfortable and I need something for the pain, I said. So she left, and then it was literally almost 2 hours. I want to give her the benefit of the doubt that she was just busy trying to figure out with the baby, or perhaps maybe she was charting everything that was going on. Maybe she didn't want to forget the details. But then I buzzed her again, and I'm like, I really need something. Like, I'm feeling uncomfortable. I'm still having cramps. Like, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. And she's like, okay. She finally came in. She gave me a Percocet. But obviously, I guess at that point, my pain level had already subsided. Like, got even more higher than, mm-hmm, when I asked her, that it took a while for it to kick in. And then she came in to check my IV, and I'm like, I'm in so much pain still. She's like, I still don't understand why you're in so much pain. She repeated that statement again. And at that point, I kind of
What was your assumption?
My assumption for her, I don't know. Maybe because the whole time I was laboring, I wasn't screaming like a typical patient, or I wasn't like, you know, cursing or crying, but everyone reacts to pain differently, you know? And at the point when she asked, when I told her that my IV was burning and I was crying, she also looked baffled, like, so you're not crying for your contractions, but you're crying over that. That's my feeling on pain. You can't stereotype pain, because pain is different for everyone. It's not going to be the same. Or maybe she was used to or expected me, because maybe of my race or my ethnicity, that I would be screaming, because apparently that is also very common within what they're culturally probably thought that I would be doing at, mm-hmm, that point. But I wasn't. I had a mission. I was focused, and I knew that if I, you know, breathed a certain way and I kept my cool, I was going to be able to do natural, which is what I wanted to do, which is my choice ultimately. But I guess I was more upset, I guess, because I also stereotyped her. I saw her. I said, oh, she's older. You know, this is going to be great. She has more bedside manners. You know, in my head, she's going to be more knowledgeable. She's probably going to help me labor, like, you know, and be that natural, you know, thing.
So you categorized her and associated the fact that she was an older nurse,
yes,
with that she must be more experienced. Mm-hmm. She must be more compassionate, and she'd be more understanding of what was going on. So... Did you report this to anyone?
Yes, I did. So usually by the second day before you get discharged, you have patient relations director come and say, you know, how was your overall visit? And I did relay this information to her, and her response was, wow, I'm so surprised. I've never gotten that sort of complaint from her. And I said, well, I'm not lying to you. I work in a profession, and I'm pretty knowledgeable in what's expected from her, and I felt that she didn't give me the ultimate care that she could have given to me. I said, and I told her the same thing, and I said, honestly, I was really disappointed because I thought that because she was older, I thought that I was gonna get more more in return of that, of her experience, you know, and what, you know, she has done over the years.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your satisfaction with the institution and the nursing services?
A four. Yes, yeah. Because it was, I know there was only one other patient on the unit that night. It was only me and another patient. So I have been on busy units that you still have to meet your expectations. You still have to do your hourly rounds. You still have to assess your patients hourly.
So what will you do differently?
I probably won't deliver there anymore.
No. Well, yes. But I meant, being that you're a nurse, what has this lesson kind of, how has it informed your practice?
I was really taken back. Like, the challenging thing for me was accepting the fact that she was a novice nurse, and she, like, disappointed me on all levels, because I really expected, because you always associate experience with age or experience mm-hmm. with years in your work field, and that is not the case, you know? And I definitely feel for the other patients, you know, that might have experienced with her.
So thank you again, Nurse Alice, for sharing that story. It's kind of disheartening to hear that, especially being that you're a nurse, and she knew that you were a nurse as well, and that the care still was less than optimal. Dr. Thompson, help us to understand, what are the conditions that are contributing to the rise in maternal deaths, and why is it higher for women of color?
Well, it's interesting the way Alice shares her story. One of the biggest things that we try to impress upon the nurses is ongoing assessments. And part of your assessment is listening to your patient. Your patient's complaints are considered your subjective data. So always listen to what the patients say. As a nursing professor, that's what I always teach the students. Your patients will first help you come up with the correct nursing diagnosis. So it's, I would say, a delay in assessment would delay the reaction or the intervention for that assessment. And really, why would I say it's higher for women of color? Basically, what Nurse Alice explained, it's all stereotypical. And it's interesting that she talked about age, because sometimes as a nurse, you look at this patient, you have this young millennial, and she's 20 or 25, and you say, oh, she's young and healthy, she should be able to put herself on a bedpan. Every patient should be treated accordingly. It's what they're saying, that's what their needs are. And this nurse really did a disservice to her by just saying to her, "Why? I don't understand why you're in pain." It's not for you to understand why I'm in pain. It's for you to respond to my pain and treat it accordingly.
So I heard from Alice a couple of things that concerned me. The first was that the IV was bothering her, and she immediately reported that it was burning. And it didn't sound like the nurse was sensitive to that.
And I think it's because she was just desensitized. Maybe in her head, she's like, well, I'm not changing the IV. She's in a small community hospital. Maybe there's no one there. There's no IV team to come and assess the site, see why it's burning. She should have come to look to see if the site was infiltrated. She just kind of said, well, you need this medication.
So kind of like endure the pain.
Endure the pain, or educate your patient. When it's going in, this medication, you can just educate them. This medication is likely to cause burning in the beginning, but eventually it'll subside. So if they know what to expect, it will decrease their anxiety about it.
So, but Alice was saying that the pain didn't go away, that
it was burning intensively, and I was feeling more pain with the burning than actual contraction, believe it or not, at that point.
So it obviously the nurse was not making the assessment of her veins appropriately, I would stop the transfusion. If someone is having a reaction, it would be the same to me. It's the same intensity as saying, I'm itching or I can't breathe because you're giving me this medication. It's obvious I could be having an allergic reaction to it. So respond. Don't just look at me like, okay.
Deal with it.
Exactly. Yeah.
I just want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Dr. Kenya Beard and my guest for today, Dr. Thompson and Nurse Alice. This is Health Cetera for the Center for Health Media, Health Policy and Media Engagement. I just want to circle back to you, Dr. Thompson, and ask you, what can women do personally to improve pregnancy outcomes?
Well, really, it all begins with preconceptual care. From the beginning, if you know, if you're planning the pregnancy, which is ideal, you take steps to help really... you want to take steps to take care of yourself. If you have pre-existing conditions, deal with that. Make sure that things are in control. If you have high blood pressure, if you're obese, if you have diabetes, first you want to deal with those things and then become well-informed. You're going to prenatal care. Ask questions. Be aware of what's going on. Know what your doctor's intended birth plans are for you. Make sure you're aware of what's going on in your body.
But realistically, what could a female do? Because when I listened to Alice's story, she did do what you're saying to do. Be aware of your body and report how you feel. And she did that. But it doesn't seem like her reports were heard.
Well, unfortunately, you have nurses that just kind of slip through the cracks. They're still working, but she took it a step up and said, hey, this is a problem. Now, I would say if there was a supervisor around, I mean, I know Alice didn't take it to that extreme, but I would say if there was a supervisor around, I would definitely report it her at that time. Mm-hmm. This is a problem. It needs to be addressed. Let's address it before it becomes an adverse event.
So really, it sounds like the caregiver would have to do that, because I'm imagining my kids are just almost 3 decades ago when I had kids, but you're in so much pain. I can't see how you would have the wherewithal to say, oh, I want a nursing supervisor. That's one more thing that you shouldn't have to deal with. And I guess my question for you, Dr. Thompson, is what can we do as providers? Because I heard you reference sometimes we healthcare professionals, some of us slip through the crack. But I'm going to challenge you on this, because cognitive scientists are saying that everyone is wired to have biases. We all do. And Alice was very honest in her ability to share with us that, you know, she had a bias also. She thought because this nurse was older that she would be more competent, more skilled in the delivery of a child, and she felt that was not correct. So I'm sure the nurse had biases about Alice as well. Do you think that those biases came into play and that's why she didn't get optimal care?
Of course, absolutely. And I think, I'm not sure how long ago her nurse came out of school, but I think we need this continuing professional development for these nurses. They should have continuous training, so to speak, or
sort of bias awareness training.
Bias awareness, implicit bias. Some people don't know that the comments they make could be considered microaggressive in a sense that you don't realize what you're saying is you're imposing your personal beliefs on a patient based on what you think they should be and not what they're saying to you. And because of your bias, you're blocking pertinent information from that patient, contributing to the problem. So we have to continuously teach or encourage our nurses to be objective. And I mean, we're doing that in the schools now, with that we're really working hard to do that with the nursing students. So the nurses who have been in the field for so long may be desensitized. We have to remind them.
So I want to thank you both again and just close out with, I know that there are multiple factors that influence maternal death rate. Improving patient-provider communication is one recommendation. However, bias, the unconscious or conscious attitudes, beliefs, and thoughts of healthcare providers, bias really disrupts patient safety and contributes to negative outcomes. And I want to thank you both for being on the show.